Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and you're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio. Carlene Carter was born with country music running in her veins. She's the daughter of country music stars June Carter and Carl Smith, and she's the granddaughter of Maybelle Carter of the Carter family. We talked to Carlene backstage at the Stoughton Opera House before her show, and it was quite a show. Carlene may not be turning cartwheels on stage anymore, but she's still full of energy, and her voice might be better than it's ever been. Carlene, your latest album is called Carter Girl, and it was released in 2014, and all 12 of the songs were written by or co-written by a member of the Carter family. Most of them were composed by your great-uncle, A.P. Carter. And the website AllMusic said that, quote, Carlene Carter has confronted the mighty legacy of the Carter family songbook and allowed it to strengthen her music rather than buckling under its weight, end quote. So I'm curious, did you feel a lot of pressure to honor your family's legacy while you were recording this album?
No, not at that point. But, you know, years ago, when I knew I was going to do this album someday, but I always felt like while the Carters were still alive, while my aunts and my mom, Helen, Anita, and June were still alive, that they were doing that, and I didn't need to do that. And then when Mom passed away, I didn't want to do one of those things where somebody dies and you go off and do a Carter family album and cash in on the grief or something. Honestly, it hurt too bad to sing the music right after she died. So I waited until I was able to make those songs mine and embrace them and not be thinking that I had to do them exactly the way that they had done it or exactly the way Helen, Anita, and June did it, because there was a lot of different Carter family phases out of three generations. There really are. But I really lucked out when I got Don Was involved in the project. I said, I really want this to be they play with me. I want to be able to play all these songs, just me and the guitar, and then I want everything else to be gravy on it. And that's exactly what happened. And it was the first time I'd ever, like, played all my guitar parts live and all my vocals live.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting that you got Don Was to produce it because, of course, he was the leader of the 1980s funk rock band Was Not Was, and he's produced a slew of artists like Bonnie Raitt, Willie Nelson, Iggy Pop. How did Don influence the sound of the album?
We had lots of conversations about it, and I made lots of lists of different songs. I wanted to find some that were really well-known, but then some that weren't so well-known. And I also wanted to just let the band kind of come in and make it just a little bit more jazzy or whatever, or, you know, more contemporary. And Don is just, he's a bass player, he's a musician, he's very lyrical in his playing. As Jim Keltner, the drummer on it, the great Jim Keltner, he's very lyrical in his playing. So it went really well with the music. So Don is just like, he's all about like trying to get what's in your head or how you want it to sound. And so I remember after the first song we cut was Little Black Train, and he goes, okay, now I get what we're going to do.
Yeah.
But he's just like that. And, you know, I've trusted him completely. And I waited for him to be available because I just had a gut feeling that he was the right person. Because I didn't want it to be like just Carlene singing a bunch of Carter family songs.
Yeah.
You know, it had to be that way.
So you mentioned Little Black Train. Tell me a bit about that, why you chose to do that song.
You know, it's a spiritual song. I never had heard it before, which is so bizarre. But when I started researching the Carter family music, there was like 700 songs. And I never realized there were quite that many. So I ended up getting In the Shadow of Clinch Mountain, the box set of the Carter family, the original recordings. And I went through them and I looked through the book and I looked at lyrics and titles. And I didn't listen to the music until I saw something that I wanted to sing about. And that's how I picked stuff.
There's a little black train a-coming, set your business right. There's a little black train a-coming, and it may be here tonight. Go tell that ballroom lady, all just in the world of pride, the Death Star train is coming, better take every ride.
You know, I had a lot of ambition about doing the record in the sense that I wanted to honor my aunts. I wanted to do a song that Helen had written. I wanted to do a song that Anita was very well known for singing. I wanted to do a song that Mom had written. And I managed to do that. And I also managed to stick a couple of songs in there that I wrote. All the songs say that they were written by A.P. Carter. Most of the Carter family songs do. But the reality of it is because of the times back then, you know, he was the head patriarch. my grandma and my Aunt Sarah were very instrumental in the creating of these songs as well. You know, AP would go out and find songs. He'd go knock on somebody's front porch door and say, hey, you got any songs your grandma taught you? And that's how a lot of things would come. And then he would, like, hone them up. But grandma told me, I said, so what did you do mainly? She said, he'd bring home scraps of paper, and I just make up a little tune for it. And so... that's the sweetest thing when I think about Grandma being so young and doing that.
You recorded a new version of one of your signature songs, Me in the Wildwood Rose, for Carter Girl. And this is a beautiful song in which you share childhood memories of your grandparents, Maybelle and Ezra, as well as your half-sister, Rosie Nix Adams, who passed away in 2003. Why did you want to re-record the song?
Because it meant more to me than it did when I wrote it in 1990. I think I wrote it in 1989, but it came out in 1990. It meant even more because they had all passed away, and Rosie as well had passed away. So it was my honoring them, all of them, that had, you know, made me who I am. And so my cousin Lori and I, we're the girls that are left that sing. And then there's other generations coming down, like my daughter, Tiffany, and I've got granddaughters that are interested in it. So it's cool, you know. And that's what my grandmother's wish was, is that we would keep the music alive always. And so as a young kid, that's what I was told. When we're all gone, you have to make sure to keep the music alive. And that was drilled in me. And not in a mean way, or it's like we've got a responsibility here. The most refreshing thing I think about this music for me was the fact that it is timeless. Some of those things were written a very long time ago, and they still apply to today.
To my ears, this version of Me and the Wildwood Rose has a much more melancholy, poignant feel to it.
Yeah, it's a lot more emotional to sing.
In my grandma's house, her children would sing. Guitars are twanging and their laughter would ring. I was little, but I was the biggest kid. I wanted to do what the grown-ups did. In an epic shiny car, we'd head down the road, sing for the miners who brought out the coal many a time. Slept on the floorboards cold, on a quilt, my little sister, the Wildwood Rose.
Let's rewind back to 1990, which is when you released your most commercially successful album, I Fell in Love. You had four hit singles from this album, including the title track, which features some great frenetic fretwork from the legendary Albert Lee. Can you tell me a bit about this song?
Well, actually, I can tell you the truth about the song was that I had been working with Howie Epstein, and, you know, who's from Milwaukee.
Yes, and, thank you.
And the late, great Howie Epstein. I did not want a boyfriend. I did not want to fall in love with a producer. I didn't want to fall in love with a bass-playing producer like I had married before.
Yes, Nick Lowe,
you know?
Yes.
Nick.
Yeah.
And but I remember saying to my one of my best friends, Kathy Valentine, I said, you know that Howie Epstein? She goes, yeah. And I said, I think I like him. And I remember thinking, I fell in love. And then I said, what you want to do that for? And I just had this vision of it being like this real sing-along thing from in the audience.
Yeah.
And it was really fun and you know, kind of taking the Mickey out of things.
Howie produced this album and then co-produced your next two, so he played a big role in this
kind of
revival, if we can call it
that. He did, and you know, we were learning how to make those kind of records together in a way, because he made a lot of records, but not as a producer. He produced a little bit, but not very much, and one of the reasons why we kept our relationship kind of quiet and on the down low was because we didn't want people to go, oh, he's only producing her because he's her boyfriend,
yeah.
or, you know, any of that kind of bull.
Yeah,
we were together a very long time, and eventually we weren't able to work together. He just butted heads too much. And
yeah.
I just said, we can either be boyfriend and girlfriend or we can work together. He was a taskmaster. You know, perfectionist. It shows in the records. They're really, really tight and really good. And we had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it comes through. It's a lot, they're a lot of fun.
And
to
it was
listen
exciting
to.
Because the first thing when we did, I Fell in Love, the guys that played on it, the original guys, Ben Mott, Albert, Howie, Jim Keltner was on it in the beginning. He came and did a drum machine for it. And
oh,
they
really?
All did it on spec. And that's what got me my record deal, was four songs that are on I Fell in Love. That's what got Warner Brothers interested in me again. Also, the fact that I said, okay, guys, I think I owe you a record that you might get on the radio. And I'm country now.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
they exactly. never really knew what to do with me. It's like I was kind of like a little too rockin'. A little too rockin' for country.
Right, that's which is on. What I wanted to ask you about, because my introduction to your music was your third album, Musical Shapes, which was produced by your husband-to-be, Niccolo, and featured his band Rockpile on most of the album, Dave Edmunds, Billy Bremner, and Terry Williams. One critic described this album as perhaps the greatest fusion of rock and country since the days of rockabilly. Well, you were obviously intentionally trying to combine rock
we
and
were.
Country.
Yeah, you know, Rockpile were perfect for it. Really, Musical Shapes was the record I went to England to make. And it all fell together. And the reason it did work is because by that point, I had known these guys for a good long while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like we were just thrown in the room and they were going, oh, do you know George Jones?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It was the first thing Dave Evans ever said to me.
Excuse my stare, it's only admiration. I cannot hide this infatuation.
Was this rocking out kind of like, was it in some way kind of a rebellion against your country music heritage at
no.
all? Or it's just what you were interested
it's just,
in?
It's just my body.
Yeah.
I mean, I just like had to go.
I just,
you know, I always just like had a lot of energy and I wanted to be, and I actually set out to do it in the 90s. I wanted to be the rockiest country female act that there was ever. I turned cartwheels across the stage. I would fly myself out into the audience and hopefully they'd catch me. Most of the time they did. I had a few boo-boos. My son one time said, going, Mom, get up.
Yeah.
What's going on? I can't. But yeah, we had some fun times. But
yeah.
It also took a toll on me physically because I was so animated. I was in incredible shape. Now, these days, it's like I still move and everything, but it's like I'm a little bit more mellow at 63.
Music critic Bill Friscus Warren has said that you're a lot like Emmylou Harris in the sense that you are both roots music renaissance women who can do it all. What do you think of that description?
Wow, that is an amazing compliment.
Yeah.
Wow, I just got cold chills from that because Emmy is my hero.
Yeah.
Well,
you're probably her hero.
Oh, well, I don't know. But I was really, the last tour I did with Mellencamp, I put Emmy's name in the hat. And she came out and did it with us.
Oh, cool.
And that was fantastic because I'd always wanted to be on tour with her. And then recently we did the Ke'amo cruise. My band and I went down and did that. And Emmylou was on it as well.
Oh, great.
And for the first time I got to sing, she sang with me on Easy From Now On.
Oh, cool. The final track on I Fell in Love.
Yeah, which is the song that I wrote for her that
wonderful.
She recorded in 1978.
Fantastic, yeah.
It's going to be
Carlene Carter is a country music singer and songwriter. Her latest album is called Carter Girl. You can find out more about Carlene at wpr.org/beta. That does it for this edition of Beta. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta podcast via iTunes or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a rating or a comment. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter @WPRBeta. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
You don't sell the steak, you sell the sizzle.
Our technical and music director is Steve Gotcher.
You just did the most acid I've ever seen anybody eat in my life.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
He said he understood, but I could see in his eyes that he didn't.
And thanks to you, our alphas. Until next week, I'm Doug Gordon.
Well, Dr. Leary, I find your product boring.